You're listening to KCBS In Depth.
Really, in order to find quality care, you often have to be on a wait list that's months long.
The people, places, and issues the Bay Area is talking about.
The aggressive advocates who were looking to overrule Roe for so long, they really had no idea of the consequences they might be opening up.
In this case, there very well may be charges that are appropriate. For example, trying to obstruct an official proceeding of Congress, right? That is unlawful.
This is KCBS In Depth.
Welcome to KCBS In Depth. I'm Mike DeWald. As some Bay Area college students prepare to go back to class, some student athletes are already back on the field, starting to practice ahead of the upcoming season. It comes as college athletics remain in a constant state of flux. As student athletes now have the ability to sign NIL deals, that means name, image, and likeness, quite literally the things a student athlete can now make money from. Think of it as appearances, endorsements, sponsorships, all things that come with being a student athlete. While NIL launched in 2021, there's still plenty of gray area, and the rules are quick to change. There's also a challenge in navigating state laws at the same time. It comes as the transfer portal also allows students the ability to change schools easier in search of better opportunities on or off the field. It's created a landscape of challenge and opportunity for both student athletes and the institutions they play for. This week's In Depth takes us to San Mateo and the Peninsula Golf and Country Club, where the Bay Area-based Women's Coaching Alliance is hosting a forum on this very topic, navigating the new era of college sports. First up, we're joined by Ron Rivera, who is taking on a new role this year as general manager of the Cal football program at UC Berkeley. A Cal alum himself, Rivera played 9 seasons in the NFL as a linebacker before joining the coaching ranks, taking over a number of different roles for 5 franchises over nearly 3 decades. Now, Ron, this is your first year in this new role. Have you had the chance to settle in yet?
Well, you know, like I have. It's been exciting. I mean, I have had a very good run in, as far as football is concerned, and, you know, 36 years in the NFL, and now is an opportunity to go back and take a look at what things are and how things are as far as college football is concerned, and it's been an interesting transition. It really has.
Put yourself in your shoes, you know, starting your collegiate career. How different are the decisions, the pressures, the choices that need to be made for these college athletes, either starting their career or, you know, midway through their career?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, back then, really, when you were being recruited, you were looking at things like academics and opportunities to play more so than you were about the amount of money you were going to make. And I think that's probably the biggest thing. So decisions we were making back then were more decisions based on academic opportunities, getting your education, because there's no guarantee that you're going to make it to the NFL. There still is no guarantee today. But the big difference is the decisions these young men have to make now are family-impacting decisions, you know, not just themselves, but the mom and dad as well, and their brothers and sisters. And also it could help set up them for the rest of their lives if they do it properly. So there's a lot more pressure in that aspect because some of this money can be, you know, life-changing money, but the thing you got to be aware of is, you know, it's only going to last a very short time, and it's important that these young people understand too that, you know, just because you get a good start of money right now, it doesn't guarantee you're going to make it have an NFL career. I mean, because, you know, less than 1% of all draft eligible college football players get a chance to play in the NFL. And that comes down to about 350 to 450 guys a year. So you got to be realistic about what your opportunities really are.
Now, in your current role, are you able to be kind of a mentor, a counselor in those decisions that some of these collegiate athletes face?
Very much so. You know, the neat thing about myself, neat thing about Andrew is we're coming from a position of experience. We know what it's like to go to our universities that we're representing. We know what it's like to study and be a student and graduate. We understand what it means to play major college athletics at a major university. And so I think because of that, we have a perspective that we can share. And then to top things off, we made it. So now I think that adds credibility to what we have to say. And that's one of the things I do start my talk out with when I'm meeting with with student athletes and prospects and their parents. And that is, look, at the end of the day, you got to understand, we're recruiting you because we see something in you. But know this about us. You know, we've been voted the number one public institution in the world. And, you know, we have 25 of our majors, undergraduate majors, are in the top five nationally. So you have an opportunity to come get a great education. Why is that important? Well, it's important because, you know, less than 1% of all draft-eligible high school football players get an opportunity to, college players get an opportunity to go to the NFL.
If you think of that in the context of, you know, recruiting, yes. I imagine it makes it more challenging that you're not only recruiting sort of your next generation of students, but the ones you have currently in, you know, making sure they're not transferring, they're staying at the school. You know, what does that look like?
And that's where it's also difficult, because the hard part for your coaches is, it's never, you never get a break. I mean, you're constantly recruiting, constantly trying to make sure guys are happy, make sure guys are getting what they need. So that's very difficult on them. And so what we try to do is create the right kind of experience, the kind of experience that can help us keep people here at the University of California. So we got to make sure we're doing a good job inspiring to keep our players, and at the same time go out and get other players.
Now, we've got, you mentioned your counterpart, you know, Andrew Luck, doing a similar role over at Stanford. Do you have a little kind of arms race brewing, keeping the rivalry going here?
Yes, we do, and that's the best part about it, is that there is the rivalry, and I think that's what's special. But the thing he and I both understand is that Cal and Stanford do need each other. Big thing is, you know, we're right here in the gateway to Silicon Valley, to San Francisco, to you know, major commerce that's in this area. And so we're kind of like the feeder system. And that's what I think everybody has to understand.
Yeah, no, your focus is on the football side. Have you gotten a sense of how much this has impacted, you know, other athletics? You know, are all student athletes kind of facing these similar decisions and choices?
They are. And I think the big thing about facing these decisions is just understanding the fact that, you know, decisions you make are going to impact your family as well. Not just you, but your family. So it is different. There is that on the line. So it has made things real interesting.
The new season on the horizon coming up soon. What's the scouting report this year for the Golden Bears?
Well, I like where we are. I really do. I thought we had a real good recruiting season. We had a good spring and came out of the portal feeling pretty good about ourselves. You know, right now we just had our sixth practice. Looked very sharp, very crisp. Very excited with what Justin Wilcox and his coaching staff have done. It's been really kind of a neat experience for me, kind of watching how things run in college football compared to what it was like in the NFL. And, you know, I'm trying to put my own little twist and spin on things, but I think that, you know, these guys have got a real good handle on it right now. And, you know, I'm just here to guide, help, mentor, and help raise resources and funds for the athletic program.
That is former NFL head coach and current general manager of the Cal football program, Ron Rivera. Let's look at NIL by the numbers. While the top college players are earning upwards of $4 to $6 million, those kinds of figures are few and far between. Based on data released by the NCAA, the average total earnings is more than $21,000, but most deals are significantly less than that. More than half of NIL deals are valued at $100 or less. Maybe less of a surprise, more than one-third of deals are for football, that's the most, followed by men's basketball, women's basketball, baseball, and softball. Believe it or not, the total valuation of the entire NIL industry is now somewhere in the neighborhood of about $1.7 billion. That spurred some calls for more federal oversight into how all that money is being spent. Now let's take a turn and look at this issue through the lens of the pro game. For that, we're joined by the moderator of this event. Mina Kimes is a football analyst with ESPN and an Emmy Award winner as part of NFL Live. She's also launched her own podcast, The Mina Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. Now, Mina, you cover the NFL on a daily basis now, but it didn't start that way. For those not familiar with your background, describe the journey to where you are now.
Yeah, so before I joined ESPN in, I believe, 2014, I was a business journalist, an investigative reporter for Fortune magazine, then for Bloomberg News. When I joined ESPN, it was as a writer initially, writing for ESPN the magazine, which no longer exists. And then from there, I launched my podcast, which is a football show. I started doing sports radio, ESPN radio, became a panelist on shows like Around the Horn. And then in 2020, when we rebooted NFL Live, I switched over to becoming just full-time a football analyst. And that's what I've done ever since.
And now, it sort of came at the same time. These may be two different things. But you know, did you find some crossover that such an emphasis on analytics and data and that there was a little bit of a bridge of both worlds there that made it, the transition kind of more seamless?
I think so, yeah. You know, when I look back to what I was doing as a business journalist and what I do now, it's obviously extremely different. It was a lot more similar to being a sports writer, because even if it was about a different field, I was still writing. But, you know, the process that I used back then was very based in numbers, in data, looking through data, sometimes back when I was an investigator reporter, data that wasn't publicly available, and trying to find patterns and stories in the numbers. And I think that's really what I do now, honestly. I mean, I combine it with film study and conversations I have with people in and around the league. But a lot of the work that I do is based on using numbers to tell stories. And I think that that through line has continued.
And now, looking at why we're here today, and part of the conversation is college sports and collegiate athletics and the whole new world that it is right now. Even from the lens of, you know, of covering pro sports, you know, how chaotic is it in the college game right now?
It is the wild, wild west in college sports. And Andrew and Ron will be able to speak to that in great detail. I think their job is very complicated and very important right now because of all of the, I would say not just the uncertainty, but the constantly changing nature of the of college sports in terms of regulation, economics, what is and isn't possible when it comes to putting teams together across different sports. It's chaotic, quite frankly. I, in my job, look at it from the angle of the NFL in terms of, you know, the NFL draft and the coaches who come from college to the league. But I don't envy anyone, I think, in college sports now trying to get their arms around it because it seems to change every day.
I was going to say, do you, especially in covering something like the draft, do you notice the reverberations, some of the kind of aftershocks of that for players coming out? Is it, there a difference on that end of things?
100%. I was actually just doing some prep for, I do color for the Rams, and our first preseason game is Saturday. I was looking up the bios of the undrafted players that they signed this year. And it's changed so much from just a few years ago when I first started doing it. It's very common now to see a guy who's played for three different teams, right? Just transferring. And it doesn't have the same connotations. You know, it doesn't mean anything necessarily. There's a million reasons why players transfer now. Financial opportunities, playing time opportunities, all of it being wanting to be close to home. But it does make the shape of their college careers really different. And I think, as you'll hear from Andrew and Ron today, it affects development. It affects sort of the arc that some of these guys take towards playing in the pros when they do, going through different coaching staffs. And it's definitely something that's affected the draft process.
Looking at it, I guess, specifically from, you know, a student athlete perspective, I mean, do you feel like it gives them, I guess, a little more like an agency in choosing their future, or does it create, you know, more questions for them?
Well, it gives them something that they've long been deprived of, which is the chance to earn a living off of their work. And that's the flip side of it, right? Like, we often look at this through the lens of the complications it creates for colleges, and I've been talking about it from the draft process, but the reason this is happening is because these athletes have been working and they generate a lot of revenue for these colleges, and we're seeing all of these changes, whether it's the unlocking of name, image, and likeness a few years ago, or more recently settlements leading to revenue sharing. It's happening because for reasons based in fairness, quite frankly. and it's still not a free market. They're still not treated as employees. So we're in kind of a weird is the wrong word. I would say a liminal zone right now where finally these students are getting the opportunity to earn money, but not in a conventional fashion. It's not a free market.
In some ways, I mean, it's probably not a perfect compliment, but in some ways it would prepare them a little bit for off the field of the next step, I would think. There's some complementary levels to that.
I think you might hear Andrea Ron talk about this a little bit today, but a lot of colleges do provide resources to help athletes kind of navigate the NIL world and they're able to hire help now to help them in terms of negotiating contracts and seeing what's available to them. But yeah, essentially you're entering the workforce earlier than you had in the past, even if it's you're not technically a worker in a traditional sense.
You know, also kind of one of the conversations today also surrounding women's sports and just the massive meteoric rise they're having right now. And, you know, being in the Bay Area, I mean, just down the road, the Golden State Valkyries are maybe as exciting as any story this year of a franchise launching and finding immediate success. You know, what's kind of your kind of temperature check on where things are at right now with that rise of women's sports, the attention it's getting, the conversation that it's sparking, where are things at in this moment?
Well, I think attention is kind of the key word there, because the appetite for women's sports, both from a participation angle and also from a fan angle, has always been there. I think we in sports media have only just begun to catch up to that demand in terms of supplying coverage, and coverage is required for growth. I think the reason, a big part of why this growth is happening, is we're finally shining a light on women's basketball is really sort of the big story right now, but I would say a variety of women's sports starting at the college level. I cover football at ESPN, so I'm in a different field. But when I look across and see my colleagues who are covering, in particular, women's basketball right now, and seeing how that is, it generates more and more interest and attention, along with, obviously, the rise of some superstar athletes and whatnot, it just seems like the growth potential is massive in the space.
And I think shining that light, I think, has changed the discourse around, collective bargaining negotiations, things like that. That if that was happening 5-10 years ago, it's probably a different conversation than I think by and large the support the players are getting.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, when the WNBA players at their All-Star Weekend sort of drew attention to the pay inequity issue, in the past it was so often met with derision and also just candidly people not understanding economics but I think now that people recognize the growth potential and see the amount of money that is being poured into these leagues, it's easier for outsiders to sort of bridge the mental gap of understanding why these athletes deserve a bigger share of the pie, and that they're asking for a bigger share of the pie. They're not asking for X amount of dollars per se. So it's an exciting time. It does feel like an inflection point for women's sports in a lot of ways.
You probably see this a little bit in the NFL, but even off the field, whether it's the front office or coaching positions or broadcast positions, that there are more women earning these roles and getting into these roles and interested in these roles. That that visibility is there probably more so than it's ever been.
Yeah, the NFL in particular, which is sort of, it's my area, the growth for women in front offices and on coaching staffs has been incredible over the last few years. At the NFL Combine, I was moderated a panel as part of their Women's Coaching Summit, and it was incredible to me to look around and see all of the women who are on staffs of NFL teams now. It just is so radically different from a few years ago, and they're in a variety of roles. It's honestly pretty remarkable. I know that Jane Goodell has played a really big role in pushing that forward. And it's honestly, the NFL in my mind is ahead of sports media. It's ahead of college sports when it comes to women in football in particular. You know, I think those are areas where we still have a ways to go in sports media. I think especially on the analysis side, opinionating, and then in college football, and that's something we're going to talk about today. I think you really see that they have to, that if we want to build pipelines for female coaches, whether it's high school or college level, they almost have to catch up with the NFL.
Mm-hmm. One thing that you've done so well is handling that kind of ugly side that is still there, whether it's social media or Twitter/X/whatever, and you know, calling out some of that if you're getting comments, things like that, and responding to them, and you know, kind of putting that attention on that. Was there a time that you realized that like I can kind of fight back? When this
I used to do it a lot more. Now that I don't really look at it as much. I think a lot of us are in the same boat as the platform has become less usable. So I don't see it as often. Earlier in my career, I feel like I was a lot feistier online and more likely to engage. I try to pick my spots a little bit more now. Often because it just like can be, it just kind of ends up consuming your own time. But, I do feel it's important for anyone who's marginalized, but especially young women in our industry, to less so to see that you can fight back or push back, but more so to see that we all get it, and it's sort of irrespective of what we're actually doing. It's all just identity based. I think that's important to show.
Now, to close out, I'd be remiss. We are in the backyard of Levi's Stadium. For 49ers fans listening, should they be optimistic this season? Should they be worried? What should they be thinking?
I think it's going to be better than last year. I'll start there. This is the most injured team in football last season. Knock on wood, it's unlikely to repeat the bad injury luck, even if there are some injuries. I think defensively, I'm optimistic about the return of Robert Saleh and some of the additions they made on the defensive line. I think are going to really help in run defense. And then I was really impressed with Brock Purdy last year. I thought he played really well in, frankly, adverse circumstances as talent kept dropping like flies around him. I thought showed a lot of playmaking metal and ability to carry the offense, in ways that were maybe not there earlier in his career. So hopefully this year he can build on that experience from last season with better talent around him. And the NFC West feels wide open, honestly. I just did an NFC West preview on my podcast, Meet Kimes Show, featuring Lenny. If Niners fans want to check that out. And our conclusion was, honestly, all four teams could finish in any order, and I would not be surprised.
Does Terry McLaurin suit up as a Niner next year? I don't think so.
I know I do all the shows, and we're always asked about these trade requests, and I'm always like, I don't know. They're all going to just stay on their teams.
Exactly.
NFL.
Everyone stays where they have stuff.
Pretty much, yeah.
That is Mina Kimes, ESPN NFL analyst and the moderator of this panel here at the Peninsula Golf and Country Club in San Mateo. Let's dig in just a little more on the rise of women's sports. For that, we welcome the organizer of this event. She is Pam Baker, founder of the Women's Coaching Alliance. First, tell us a bit about the organization and what you do.
Yeah, we are all about developing female leaders through coaching youth sports. So we connect with young women who are between the ages of 15 to 26 who have played a sport, and they get a chance to coach and lead. They get a co-coach, they get trained, they get two adult mentors, and they get paid. Our goal is let's front load these leadership skills before young women head out into the world. And our side benefit is that we have more female coaches on the sidelines. And we're super fortunate to have Ron and Andrew, who have been really big supporters of our organization.
I was going to say, in the moment right now, I mean, see just the boom in women's sports on one side.
Yeah.
But on the other hand of that, there are all of the coaching and broadcasting and front office roles and all of these different things. Are you seeing that women are getting these roles, are wanting these roles, and fitting in with the organization's mission.
They absolutely are. I was out facilitating a coaching clinic with the Valkyries last night, and there's so much buzz about what's happening in women's sports, yes, on the court, but also to your point, all of those back office roles. And I think one of the things that we're finding with our young women who are coaching is the experience of coaching exposes them to different parts of sports that they weren't necessarily aware of. And they recognize that even if they're not going to play the sport professionally, there are lots of ways that they can earn a living from their interest in sport. So I think it's really creating tons of interest and momentum. And it's been great to see, because now we're thinking about who's the best person for the role, not just who's the best man for the role.
And in the Bay Area in particular, I mean, is this sort of, you know, the epicenter for the, I mean, we've got the AFC, we've got the Valkyries. There's so much energy going into it right now. Do you feel that similar momentum?
Absolutely. And I think we're seeing it replicated in other parts of the country. Denver with the new National Women's Soccer League team. Kansas City being the first one to build its own stadium for women's soccer. So I think so many things start in the Bay and move elsewhere. But definitely, I think we're feeling it in so many different sports, and it's been really exciting to watch.
That is Pam Baker, founder of the Women's Coaching Alliance. And our thanks to all the guests today on In Depth, including ESPN football analyst Mita Kimes and Cal football general manager Ron Rivera. Now, given all these complexities of NIL, the transfer portal, and some of these massive sums of money that have the college game looking a little more like the pros, it's clear this isn't an issue going away anytime soon. But in the meantime, we can still all enjoy the competition and the rivalries playing out on the field. For KCBS In Depth, I'm Mike DeWald.
You've been listening to KCBS In Depth. Get every episode by subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Visit KCBSRadio.com for more news and interviews. We are the Bay Area's news station, KCBS.